Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 63. We're covering the 2019 Arnold Palmer Invitational and the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System, and with me we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. How are you this Tuesday morning?
Yeah, good. Our new website's launched.
Yeah, all looking good. Some good positive feedback so far. So if anyone's got any views or opinions or improvements or just general comments, then let us know. All good, because we'll be spending the next few weeks getting it fully up to speed. But the basics are there, so all good.
We're very pleased with it. That website address is golfbettingsystem.co.uk. As Paul said, we are going to... It's pretty much the base level as it stands, and we're going to be adding lots of content, lots of new different functionality on there as well. So it's all going to develop as we move towards Augusta. You can follow us on social media. We're available at Bamford Golf. That's me. Paul is at Golf Betting. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. That link is available in the description box. We've had a huge influx of new group members this week.
Yeah,
based upon one particular bet that one of our members posted. How much did he win, Paul?
Yeah, it's a guy called Paul Angel. I hope that's how you pronounce his surname. But yeah, it's he got both winners up last week. So, you know, to pick out Kurt Kitayama and Mitchell, remind me of his name, Steve.
Keith Mitchell,
yeah, because he'd been called Kevin, hadn't he, on commentary. I'm getting confused between the two.
Yeah,
managed to pick both winners out last week. It was slightly in running, but even so, he won just shy of £300,000, which is an absolutely phenomenal effort to pick both of those
with some with some online bookmakers that would have been over their maximum payout. So the fact that he did it with Bet365, that's got £1 million payout, it's all good. And this is the point, isn't it? You know, all of these details. But yeah, what a phenomenal effort that was.
Huge.
Absolutely brilliant.
So yeah, if you want to come and have a look at the screenshots, then pop along to the pop along to the group and sit there salivating like everyone else.
Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. We also place this podcast on the YouTube channel. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, and a myriad of different pod channels. Can you please subscribe and follow the podcast? And please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. And naturally, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. When I actually checked the other week, we've got a 5-star rating, Paul. We've had 20 reviews since we started this, so it's not too bad at all.
Yeah, no, all much appreciated as well.
Now, we've got a review here to read. As I always say, if you leave us a review, I will read it. The title is Woogly Boogly Woogly Boogly. He's given us 2 stars.
Right.
This is from B. Tills from the United States of America. I actually love this podcast. In order to see if you actually read out your reviews at the start of each show, I wanted to do a test experiment to validate. If you read this and say, woogly, boogly, woogly, boogly, well, I've done that twice. Tea and crumpets, tea and crumpets. I'll change my 2-star review to 5. Do I need to say any more? Thank you for that, B. Tills. Much appreciated. 5 stars. Get it changed. That would be fantastic. Reviews, just give them to us and we will read. We've got nothing to hide here. Give us good, give us bad. But in the main, we tend to get some decent reviews and the podcast download numbers continue to increase, as they will as we build towards the Masters. I counted it up, 5 weeks, I believe.
Yeah, not long
to
now.
To the Masters.
Not long now at all. And of course, we've got our Masters, or our Majors competition, which is up and running. We've got well over 100 entries so far. Mentioned it last week on the pod, and we'll mention it again. Again, we'll put a link through to the entry details. But basically, give us 4 different names for one for each of the 4 majors, and you will be in with a chance of winning £250 in prizes. So £150 to the winner, £75 to the second, and £25 or currency equivalent to third place. So, yes, very simple. Give us a name for the Masters, give us a different name for the PGA, give us a different name for the US Open, give us a final different name for the Open Championship. We'll tot up how much they earn in prize money for those four majors, and the person with the biggest yielding total from their four players will win the top prize. Very straightforward.
We had an entry last week on our YouTube comments, and as I had to say to the gentleman concerned, thanks for the entry, but they have to be via email, Twitter, or via our golf betting system, yeah. Facebook.
We need to, which... we need to be able to contact people back directly, yes, if they win. So, so yes, please do it.
Yeah, imagine the scene. You win the competition and we can't get hold of you. That's effectively what we're saying, yeah. So, yeah, YouTube, not YouTube, sorry, I'll start again. Facebook, email, or via our Twitter handles. Right. Should we start with the... well, let's start with last week. Kirk Kitayama.
Yeah.
He's turned into a bit of a winning machine, this young American, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And I guess the correlation...
And he's still a big price this week.
Yeah, it's 50s. I think he opened at 60s, didn't he? He won in Mauritius, didn't he? Which is another coastal track with a bit of wind in play.
Paspalham Greens, yeah.
Paspalham Greens. There was some correlation there. You know, and we talked about Mauritius as being one of the pointers last week, but his incoming form was poor. You know, he'd won that event and it seemingly dropped right off the radar and was available at 250-1 before the event. If you dug into it, there was the odd flash of form in between times, even though he was missing the cut most weeks. He'd produced one round of 64, I think it was. I'm thinking it was either the Vic Open or the Super Six, one of those two. But again, didn't progress through the tournament. So, you know, you could grab onto a little bit of, you know, that little bit of form that he showed and potentially take a chance on him at a mad price, given the correlation of the two courses. But no, I wasn't anywhere near him. My players generally got blown off course with the sandstorm that came along. My best chance was Alex Levy, who was sitting at 4-under after the first day in fourth spot, and then he pulled out with a back issue of some description. It's probably the weight of my money dislodged a vertebra or something like that in his that was the end of that. So yeah, damp squib from me, unfortunately. I know you got a little bit closer in yours, didn't you?
Yeah, my summary, never back Kiradish Afibanrat. So he's on the never back list. But saying that, I always say that about Siwoo Kim. Look at this week. Afibanrat will probably go well this week because clearly I backed him last week. He missed the cut. I think he's got a couple of sixth places at Bay Hill. So expect that to happen. So listeners, back Afibanrat. He's a very good price this week for a player that's in the top 35 in the world, I believe. I should actually just... 125-1, I'm seeing, hanging from our friends at Unibet. Another outstanding price from Unibet, Paul. They're very good at doing that.
They do take a view, Unibet, and that's good. There's not this cut-and-paste malarkey that's going on with a lot of the bookies. They do actually have a view and an opinion. And
I've highlighted them on the golf betting show this week for the Arnold Palmer because I've just listed. They've got just a huge list of players here that they're top price or equal top price on.
Right.
They do take a view. I mean, if you're a Hao Tong Lee follower this week, 80-1 best price, they do take a view, Unibet. I think they're becoming a bookmaker to actually have active if you're a golf.
I think you need to have them as part of the portfolio of accounts that you're using, so you've got the option. Yeah.
Exactly. On top of that. So Afibanrat, no. Daniel Berger, I don't know why I ever tip him. He's just always flat as to deceive. Who else did? I can't even remember the other one. He didn't do a lot. But Sergio, yes, he was second for strokes gained tee to green all week.
Yeah.
He was second or third for approach. So actually, for a long-term bet, that 75-1 I took last week on the exchange room for the Masters... That still looks in decent shape because his game is getting to kind of Sergio levels. And I think he was like 64th out of 70 for putting. So, yeah. That effectively, his numbers were pretty much in line with Keith Mitchell's. In fact, they were probably better than Keith Mitchell's, but Keith could putt a little bit.
He got himself into a decent spot, didn't he? Kind of fried.
Oh, six under. Oh, yeah. He was six under on Friday, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then I went and I picked the boy up from nursery, come back, three under level, eight finished. And I'm like, what? That just absolutely ruined my Friday night. My missus walked in. I said, I cannot believe that Sergio Garcia. She's looking at me. Oh, he's on another one of his golfing rants. Yeah, Keith Mitchell was number one for strokes gained tee to green. Sergio Garcia was number two. But where Keith was 38th for putting, Sergio was 62nd.
Yeah, and you're not going to win a tournament putting at 62 out of 70-odd players and over the weekend.
And the real deal with Keith was he was scrambling like Billy Goat, wasn't he?
He was
sixth for strokes gained around the green. So even though he was 27th for GIR and he was 50th for proximity to hole, he wasn't hitting it close. Whenever he got in trouble, he was managing to get out of it. I mean, he was eight... sat in the bunker eight times and he's six sand saves.
Mm.
And that's what you can do at that kind of tournament, isn't it? When the wind, it wasn't even blow. Those greens were so fast. I didn't realise before last week's show and the preview that they'd actually placed 18 brand new green surfaces down there.
Yeah, they were firm, aren't they?
So as we said, yeah, it had rained and the fairways were nice and soft and receptive. And you think, well, actually, scoring might be a little bit lower this year because the greens will accept, you know, incoming. But they weren't, were they? And then I think when they knew that the wind was coming Sunday, they'd clearly been out of a hose because they were a bit softer on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Hence Palmer shooting his 63.
Yes, and it looked for
He said in his interview, well, I arrived at the course, I saw that they'd watered the greens. I knew that there was going to be 2.5 hours of no wind and I just went for it.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he was tied for the lead, wasn't he, when he walked off the golf course?
Yeah, and he parred the final hole as well. You know, had he made birdie there, set eight under as a target, you know, it could have been a different story.
He said nine. He said if he shot 61, he knew he'd win the tournament. That was his mental frame of mind. Mm. But yeah, it's a good tournament. I enjoy those. I know a lot of people say they're boring. I find that kind of tournament far more interesting than the 25 under birdie fest.
Oh yeah, and you know, fair play to Mitchell as well, you know, after bogeying the first two holes on Sunday to kind of mentally relax. I guess he'd kind of taken himself out of it mentally at that point, and to make the birdies coming home, particularly the one on the last where it was 15 feet or so, wasn't it, to win the tournament.
If you look at that Honda Classic, go back to last year, you had Justin Thomas and Luke List. Year before that, Ricky Fowler won it. You really need that golf course opens itself up to a power hitter, a ball striker who's got short game.
Yeah.
And one thing you can say about Keith Mitchell from what we knew about him, absolutely atrocious on any kind of greens apart from Bermuda. And he admits that himself.
Yeah, I saw a quote from him. Yeah.
So I tipped him up at Torrey Pines because you know that he's a blaster, takes par fives apart, and then he missed the cut because he said he's, you know, clearly just can't putt on Poa Anna. But that first trip back home to Bermuda grass, all of a sudden he feels comfortable, doesn't he?
Mm.
And he showed real bottle to win that.
He did, yeah.
With Brooks Koepka and Ricky Fowler just sitting there lurking a shot behind.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, given it, if it had gone
and
to a
playoff... And he
birdied
the last.
Yeah, if it had gone to a playoff out of the three, you know, he'd have been the long, you know, outsider of the three, and you wouldn't have fancied him to take the title, but fair play to him.
Yeah, that tournament has a history, doesn't it? Either elite players win, but this year one just snuck up and took it away from the elite. So he goes into the kind of Michael Thompson 300-1 shot file.
Yeah,
I think Mitchell's better than that, though. I think Mitchell, you might see him hanging around in the sort of world top 100 when he's established himself because he's got plenty of game. Just can't putt.
Yeah, he's one of those players that kept popping up in the first round last season, didn't he?
Yeah,
a first round leader punt, and when it got to the weekend and particularly got to Sunday, you know, he'd disappear without a trace. And you kind of thought that was going to happen again after making a couple of early bogeys, but clearly he's grown some fortitude over the last year or so. And
how often do you see that in final rounds with inexperienced guys? They They either fall off a cliff or they shoot a couple of bogeys early doors, and then all of a sudden they're mentally not going to win, and they start playing like they have done for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, can just relax, can't you? Play your golf. These guys are all very, very, very capable, as we know, and it's often just that final bit of, you know, what's between the ears that makes a difference.
I won't remember this, Paul, so I'm going to have to make a note. In fact, I'm going to make it right now on the post-it note that's sitting next to my microphone. Mm. Key track for PGA National?
Right.
Houston. Don't ask me why, but whenever I look at it, the Houston Open, players that win at Honda always play well at the Houston Open. And I'm just looking. Keith Mitchell... Sixth there last year.
Mm.
So there's something about those two courses. Because Poulter won that last year, didn't he, from Bo Hosler? But yeah, Griot was third. I know Griot put in another storming performance. But yes, Keith Mitchell was sixth there last year. Russell Henley's won at Houston, isn't he? He's won at PGA National. He was eighth last year. So it does stack up. There must be some. I think there's plenty of water at Houston.
It must be more to do with the sight lines, because it's bent grass greens, isn't it, from memory?
Yeah, they're a mix of everything. There is Bermuda in them, but they've got this velvet bent grass on the top. So, yeah, it isn't so much the putting surface.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's got to be sight lines or, you know, water involved or whatever. I just remember Matt Kuchar banging it in the water, didn't he, on the 18th there one year, and that's when he started going, was it? He used to say when he, oh golly, or oh.
he gave the win to
Matt Jones, of all people.
Yeah.
Matt Jones, wow. If Matt Jones played as well as his statistics, he'd be a 6-time major champion, Matt Jones.
Oh, there's a few like that. What about Grillo?
Yeah, there's lots like that. Emiliano Grillo, he's another one, isn't he? He should be he should already have 5 majors in the old bank account.
Yeah, he's a statistical backer's nightmare, isn't he?
You could even throw Tony Finau in there, but we're aggravating all of our listeners here, Paul. We shouldn't be going down this route. Right. I think what we're suggesting are that there are always going to be players whose statistics are fantastic every single week, but don't tend to do a lot.
Or don't, they just don't pay you out in terms of each way or wins when...
No.
At the price that's on offer.
Yeah, when the heat's in the kitchen, they tend to go backwards. Right, Arnold Palmer Invitational. Shall we crack on? That's the headline tournament this week. An interesting tournament. It's become slightly less interesting with Tiger Woods' withdrawal. He was priced up yesterday. William Hill were again, Paul, first to market yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
Tournaments.
Yeah.
So there's clearly been a decision made at William Hill Towers up in Leeds that we will get our markets up as early as we can. So well played to them, because this is happening week in, week out. Where Bet365 used to be the leader in terms of getting their markets out, it seems to be William Hill at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
They were up. They chalked up, and Dave Kellner tweeted this. Dave Kellner, who does that good podcast with Dave Tindall every week, which is well worth a listen, guys. He tweeted out, Tiger Woods 16-1, it won't last. And literally within 5 minutes, that was 12-1. and then he was as short as 9s and 10s when we went to press last night.
And then
all of a sudden, I checked my Twitter, and just I'm about to tuck into my well-earned kebab. Kebab. Sounds really healthy, doesn't it? Well, it's not really healthy. Anyway. Withdrawal. Bad neck. And then you think, well, all the market's going to move completely now, isn't it?
Yeah, just a sea of blue on all of the players either side of him, as you'd expect.
So, yeah, this is it. I'll read through best prices. We're recording this 9:20 UK time on Tuesday morning. Rory McIlroy, 7-1. The only thing I will say to Rory McIlroy backers, he has never defended a title in his life. Now, clearly that can change. Clearly he's playing some very good golf, but that would put me off at 6-1 that I'm seeing with Coral at the moment. Then we've got Justin Rose, who clearly loves the golf course. We've got Brooks Koepka, who's in good nick. Yeah, but you're looking at 12 best price for 12 best price for both of those now with Ladbrokes. Ricky Fowler at 12 to 1. Jason Day at 14. So all of those guys have been sucked south in terms of price. Then DeChambeau at 18s, although mainly 16s from what I'm seeing. And then we're out to the likes of Can't Putt on Bermuda, Hideki Matsuyama, Leishman, who's one round here. Francesco Molinari is an interesting player, I thought, because he's got a decent record at Bay Hill. He isn't that kind of bomber that you want, but if anyone's going to sneak out of the woodwork this week, Francesco, who's very lightly raced, isn't he?
He is. He'd been really, really struggling with flu. Yeah, I think he had a proper bout of flu a couple of weeks ago, so it really knocked it out of him. So,
I thought he played reasonably at the Mexico for the first time in 7 or 8 weeks.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
That was
the first event back. He was due to come back the week before, I think, and couldn't make it because he was so poorly, but. You know, as he picks up his form and gets back to full fitness, you know, he should be back to full fitness. But these flu bugs, some of them, if they're really bad, can knock it right out of you, can't they? So, interesting to see how he goes.
Fleetwood at 33s. They don't tend to lengthen Tommy's price, do they?
No.
Jesus, because he's so popular, you know, he gets just backed every single way. I still think there's something not quite right with Tommy, with the new clubs and whatever. Reed, Glover, Horschel, Poulter. Poulter's playing some great golf this season. Stenson, who isn't. Louis Oosthuizen. So it's a quality field. I haven't even mentioned Bubba Watson. Down ensconced at 55 to 1. Best price of Bet365. So yeah, it's a good price. A good, very good field. We've clearly got the Players Championship next week, which is going to be an amazing field. And then after that, we've got the Valspar Championship, which is a weaker field. I expect Jordan Spieth will be backed to Kingdom Come on that one because he does go well round Copperhead. And then we're on to, what are we on to then? We're on to the Dell Match Play, the Shell, with Dell Match Play, we then got the Valero Texas Open, I believe. And then we've got Augusta.
Yep. Soon comes around.
Yeah. Bay Hill, what do we need to know? Well, it's actually been extended this year. It wasn't long enough, so they've added another few yards. So it's now 7,454 yards long, and it's a par 72, played at sea level. It's a long old golf course. They've added distance now to the par 5 fourth hole, which is now 590 yards. Three of the par 5s are approaching 600 yards.
Mm. Yeah, trying to make it more of a challenge, aren't they? Having widened the fairways a bit recently, so it's a reasonably lengthy course. Not overly long, I guess, but still challenging.
I think it's lengthy, isn't it? It's challenging enough. I mean, the par five is 590 now, the fourth. The sixth is 555, but that's the one that's kind of on a U bet. You look at it, it's a total U, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the first shot is over water. The second shot's over water, unless you block it right into the bunkers. That's an interesting par five. The 12th is 574. And the 16th, that's the one is a must birdie. And there's lots of eagles available to 16th. That's just 511. But actually, I think what you said there is very apt here. They've widened the fairway, so even the most inaccurate drivers can hit 60% of fairways, which does actually open it up to a hell of a lot of people in the field.
Yeah.
What you get here, though, are some of the toughest par 3s on the tour. I mean, the par 3s, I'll read them out to you. 231 yards, up 200 yards, 215, 221. So there's no easy par 3 at all, and the par 5s, a lot of these plus 450-yard par 5s. Yeah. Or par 4s, rather.
Yeah, you need to be striking your irons well, don't you?
Yeah, there isn't a drivable par 4 on the golf course. And when you look at the scoring around here, it tends to be... If they turned their hand to it and they wanted to hold a major championship in Florida, this would be one of the courses that they could turn to, because you could turn this into an absolute beast. It's long, it's challenging, it often has wind. It's got plenty of different shaped holes. I always call it a classifier. It's a classical design. I know it's a 61 golf course, 1961 originally, but it really does. It suits players that have got the all-round game. And clearly, when you've got Tiger Woods winning around here 8 years, 8 victories, it kind of suggests that a bit of length off the tee is very helpful as well. Mm. Winning scores here. McIlroy was 18 under last year. He won by 3 from Bryson DeChambeau. Mark Leishman won a particularly windy and dry golf course event at 11 under. Jason Day won at 17 under. Matt Every won on a soaking wet golf course at 19 under. There was some rain in Orlando yesterday, I believe. But the rest of the week is going to be as dry as you like, and temperatures up 25, 27, 28 degrees. So I think the course is just going to firm and firm and firm and firm. So I think probably 15, 16 under, a good mid-score challenging test for this. It's 10 to what you get on these, these good courses. The PGA Tour likes a 15, 16 under winning it. I don't think the organisers want it to be one at 25 under, and it won't be. So I think it's going to be a relatively stern test. If you're shooting straight 68s, you're going to be there or thereabouts. Key statistics. What you tend to get with these tougher golf courses and these classical courses are that any kind of game shape can win, from a typical GIR ball striker through to a guy that can be like 45th for greens in regulation, but putts and scrambles like Billy Goat. So, you know, like a Jason Day kind of player.
Yeah.
The one statistic that jumps out, I mean, this is all available in my preview. If you're looking at it from a strokes gained putting, a strokes gained perspective, strokes gained off the tee, these are the averages of the last three winners. Strokes gained off the tee, 25th. Strokes gained approach, 16th, which is quite low for the strokes gained approach. Strokes gained around the green, 29th. Strokes gained tee to green, 9th. That's quite low. I mean, that Honda Classic last week, when we were looking at the key strokes gained statistics for the winners, strokes gained tee to green was 5th.
Yeah.
Now, this week it's 9th. Stroke gained putting last week, in terms of that skill set, was 18th. So across the last three winners, strokes gained putting was averaged out at 18th. And this year, Keith Mitchell was 38th for strokes gained putting at Honda, so that's even going to get bigger. But here at Bay Hill, strokes gained putting, last three winners, averages out at 3rd.
Yeah.
So you have got to have a red-hot putter.
You need to have your putting shoes on, definitely.
So Sergio Garcia this week, if he'd have played? Saying that, I wouldn't have backed him, and he'd probably putted the lights out at 1.6.
It does kind of put you off with Rory a little bit, doesn't it? Because, you know, Rory's great strength is from tee to green, and you know, he occasionally pops up with these weeks where, you know, he nails everything inside 10 feet, but they're the exception rather than the rule, aren't they? And
I think last year's win for Rory was incredible on the basis that he won with the strokes gained putting number of 1st.
Yeah, exactly.
When do you ever see that?
And, you know, with his long game, when he putts like that, he's going to win the golf tournament. He's, you know, someone's going to have to play an outstanding game to even get close to him when he's like that. But
yeah, no one really did. I think the only one that really got within touching distance, and that it was fairly interesting on the back nine last year, but the only one that really put him under any pressure was Bryson. Because when he plays like that, he's untouchable, isn't he?
Yeah. We've seen it a number of times during his career, and yeah, you combine that ball striking with a strong week on the greens, and, you know, bingo. But when are you going to second guess that he's going to come up with that one point, you know, low but 1.6 is in terms of putting average for a week? Is it? We shall see.
I tracked his numbers from last year. He missed the cut the week before at Copperhead, and that's why he was 20 to 1 to win there.
Yeah.
21st for strokes going tee to green. He was 10th for strokes going off the tee, and he was like minus, I don't know, he was like in last place for strokes going putting. But there's one thing that you can see with, he'd actually putted reasonably well at the Honda Classic 2 weeks prior. He was 17th for strokes going putting on their TIFF Eagle Greens. And Mark Leishman was 27th at the Honda the week before. He was 9th for strokes going putting. And Jason Day, when he won in 2016, had played the World Golf Championship at Doral when it was hosted there. He was 6th for strokes going putting on TIFF Eagle Bermuda Grass. And that kind of throws up a problem, because this always used to be the last event on the Florida swing. Mm. But this year, it's now the second event on the Florida swing. So only players, of course, that played at PGA National last week have got upfront experience of TIFF Eagle Bermuda Grass Greens in Florida.
Yeah.
I'll just take you through the top 10 in strokes gained putting from last week. Billy Horschel was one. He's putting lights out at the moment, Billy Horschel.
That's big for Billy, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's not the first time either. That follows on from another great strokes gained putting performance. So he's putting really well. So he's gone completely the other way. He's putting brilliantly, but his tee to green game's fallen apart, which is usually his strength. Michael Thompson at 3. We all know about Michael Thompson. He's playing some outstanding golf, yeah. But I think the world and his wife were on him last week, and he went backwards in the final round.
Yeah, it was too obvious, wasn't he? But he was within a few shots of something big, wasn't it?
Your mate Brian Gay at 4, as ever. Mm. 6, Johnny Vegas. There's worse bets this week. 7, Charles Schwartzel. Then we're out to the likes of Sloane Berger. And one I know is popular this week and will be popular, our friend Lucas Glover. He was 14th for strokes gained putting last week.
Yeah.
I could see Glover going very well, but when I saw 50-1 chalked up, I can't get involved with Lucas Glover at 50-1. If we're talking strokes gained putting and TIFF Eagle Greens, we can go back to Kapalua as well, which was the first event of the year. That's played on TIFF Eagle. I'll take you through the top 10 of putting that week, players that are playing. 1 was Bryson DeChambeau. 4 was Cameron Champ. 8 was Mark Leishman. And 9 was Jason Day. So those are guys that have putted positively on TIFF Eagle Bermuda Grass Greens so far in 2019. So I don't know. I can't get too hung up on that. I can't get too hung up on having to back someone that putted well last week at the Honda.
So no, it's just 1 week in isolation is a bit of a...
It is. If this was the last tournament of the four in the Florida swing, I would be looking for someone at some point that had putted well at one of the events. Mm. I mean, I tipped up Justin Rose last year. He'd been 3rd or 5th at strokes gained putting the week before at Copperhead. And he was 3rd in this. So it kind of stacks up.
Yep.
Just out of interest, if you're looking at the shorties this week, Ricky Fowler was 18th for strokes gained putting last week. And Brooks Koepka was 20th. Right. I suppose we should get on. What am I looking for then? I'm looking for players. This is the other thing, Paul, that I find difficult about this week. Incoming form of winners. Rory McIlroy, missed cut, Copperhead. 59th Honda, 20th Riviera. Now, it's not exactly stunning stuff, is it?
No.
And this time last year, everyone was talking about his game was in a mess. What was going on with Rory McIlroy? And typically, 20-1. No one was on him in terms of DraftKings. You know, if you were going to go for a switch hit, he would have been the perfect man last year for DraftKings.
Yeah.
He comes up and just wins. Year before that, Mark Leishman, 27th at the Honda, missed cut Riviera, 24th Scottsdale. So not disastrous, but not exactly lights out. He was 100-1 when he won this. Jason Day, even Jason Day, 23rd at Doral, 11th Pebble, missed cut Torrey Pines.
Mm.
So it's not slapping you in the forehead saying Ricky Fowler, Brooks Koepka were 2nd last week, they're going to walk this.
No. It's not.
It doesn't seem to happen that way. And yes, you have got the likes of Tiger Woods, who's come here off a win and won. Yeah, that's Tiger Woods. You've got Ernie Els that came here off of winning in 2010 at Doral, the WGC, and won this. So it can happen, does happen, but it hasn't happened recently. And when you look at Matt Every miscut, Jason Day 23rd, Mark Leishman 27th, and Rory McIlroy missed cut in terms of their preceding tournament, it doesn't shout to me you want to be chasing the boys at the very, very top of the market.
Matt Every, when he won the second time, was in awful form, wasn't he? It wasn't just a single missed cut from memory. It was a string of missed cuts.
Now, I know for a fact you're going to back Matt Every in first round leader this week.
Well, yes, once...
He's on a good side of the draw. Yeah.
It's one of those bets that's late on a Tuesday night once you've seen the draw and the first round leader market is fully formed. There's only five or six bookies up at the moment with a market. But yes, I'm hoping for 100 to 1 or close to for Every first round leader, and we'll see how the draw pans out in terms of where he gets drawn. And I know from what you've said that the morning wave might have particularly cold weather to contend with, which may sway things very slightly in the...
I'm looking it up, Paul. Keep talking. Yeah, I'm looking it up.
In the advantage of the afternoon stars. I guess with a longer track, 7,450 yards isn't short by any stretch, is it?
Here you go. You're going to like this. Listeners, listen. That's an oxymoron. 7 o'clock Thursday morning, it's going to be 8 degrees Celsius. And it's going to be like 12 mile an hour winds.
Right.
By 1 o'clock, it's up to 20 degrees Celsius and the wind's actually dropped away. So this, it shouts to me, actually, if you're looking in terms of draw, to me, I think PM-AM is the draw to be on.
Yeah.
And that forecast hasn't overly changed from what I saw yesterday morning.
No.
So if you're seeing Matt Every in the afternoon wave, I'd be very, very interested.
Yeah. It'll be kind of 8 o'clock UK time tonight, I guess, when we'll see the see the field in terms of their tee times. So yeah, keep a close eye on that.
Stenson last year was a PM starter, shot 8 under. Jason Day in 2016 was a PM starter. He was 6 under, first round leader. Morgan Hoffman 2015 PM. Shot 6 under.
It's all stacking up, isn't it? You watch. He'll get like a 6:50 AM tee time now. So
you won't be on him, and he'll shoot 9 under. Yeah? Is that how it's going to work?
Yeah, most likely. But yes, I'll keep my eye on that later. But no, I haven't backed him yet. But yes, he's firmly on my first round leader radar this week.
I backed Every in Puerto Rico. He never really got close. You look at him, he's still, in terms of overall, I know a lot of people on there, 125 to 1 yesterday, I've got to be on Matt Every. He's very consistent at the moment. He just doesn't seem to have the get up and go to get involved and stay involved. Now, whether that changes on what clearly is his favourite golf course remains to be seen. But he's been backed in. He's 101 across the board now,
right,
which isn't a bad price. That's overall. I'd be more tempted on the first round leader bet, has to be said. Especially as I was on him in Puerto Rico and he did nothing.
Mm.
So yeah, if he gets a good draw, I think I might join you on that.
Yeah.
We'll tweet something out to confirm that we're getting involved.
We'll watch that with interest tonight when the draw.
You're only going to get 80 to 1 though.
Yeah, if he's been chopped down to 100s outright, then it's not going to be any more than 80. Some, you know, you might get a 90 at Unibet or something like that, I guess, who tend to have slightly differential first round leader prices. But
I'm just looking at the moment. This is worth pointing out to listeners. First round leader on the PGA Tour last few weeks, Paddy Power and Betfair Sportsbook have both gone 7 places each way, a 50 odds, where everyone else is stacking up at the old 5.25.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of value there if you're looking for a bigger price with Betfair or Paddy Power offering the 7 places on first round leader. That's something potentially also to look at very closely when we're coming up to the Masters. So we'll keep an eye on that. So yeah, I don't know. I must say I did struggle this week. It's an event where I used to have a very select amount of statistics that seemed to come in year in, year out, and that was totally destroyed recently. So I'm trying to select things more recently as well now with just a natural view on things, which is what I used to do when I used to actually get some very good results way back in like 2012 when I'm huge. I think I made like 250 points over the season. So I'm trying to become more just natural and more organic with my selections. I'll throw this one out there first. I had to back Siwoo Kim, point each way, 80-1 with Unibet. Sixth place each way, 50 odds. He's a Bermuda monster. He's playing some of the best golf of his career. Fourth at Pebble, third at Riviera. I'm on board. He will miss the cut.
He's actually putting
well, isn't
he? That
will just happen, yeah. He'll miss the cut. He'll do a Kira Deshavibel.
I know he's on a pocket.
I just thought his price was half good for a bloke that's playing so well.
Yeah, well, I noticed when I pulled the stats together for this week that he did stick out from a putting perspective, and I know we've berated his putting, haven't we, for a while.
Ever since
last year. But
that was the weakness, wasn't it?
Yeah, clearly. And we know he's a decent ball striker.
He's 14th for par 4 scoring average. Brilliant. He's 13th for par 5 birdie and better conversion. Oh, outstanding. And he's 4th for strokes gained putting. Across the whole PGA Tour season to date. You know, with numbers like that, on a guy that's finished both of his wins on Bermuda grass, clearly TPC Sawgrass 2017 Players' Champion, that was on Tiff Eagle. Yeah, if you're seeing him finish 4th at Pebble Beach on Poana,
yeah,
you just think, well, he's a bit of an auto bet. So he will miss the cut because I'm on him, he always does, but I couldn't resist. The one that I really do like this week, in fact, there's three I really like. In fact, there's four, but I just know that every time I tip up Siwoo Kim or any kind of Asian golfer, they miss the cut. I know that you're involved with this individual. I'm involved, but I've gone a slightly different style. I'm going top 10 bet, and this price is still hanging there. 18-1 with Unibet. And just to throw that into context, you know, this is turned into the Unibet edition. But I think what I might do, Paul, we'll have a chat about it, but I might put a link through in the description to the new customer offer with Unibet. Because it's a decent offer. It's up to £40 of free bets and bonuses with Unibet on a bet 20, get 40. You and I have had this discussion now for about 5 months that they have got a lot better with their golf betting proposition. You won't get loads of additional places, but what you do get are outstanding prices. Now, listen to this. I've tipped up this particular individual by the name of Danny Willett, 18-1, top 10. Yep. I look at the competitors this week. He is 12-1 and 10-1 elsewhere. And they're 18-1, and they haven't even reduced the price since I put these tips out.
Last week. And they haven't reduced it since Woods withdrew either, which a lot of other prices have taken a bit of a chop to them, particularly at the top of the market.
Now, I think you got involved in each way action, didn't you?
Yeah, I've gone with it as well. I did take him at 200-1, six places. Again, that was with Unibet. I've clearly taken a bit of a dim view of Danny's chances this week, but yeah. Outside of that, his best price is 150. So that, again, was an outstanding, a standout price for a player who's shown some form and clearly has the ability to win at a very high level, given his Masters win.
Would you say it's a bit... Yeah, you know, he's priced up with Harris English. He's priced up with Brian Gay. On this track, I don't see that.
Well,
He's better. I think he's better than Brian Gay around Bay Hill, don't you?
Yeah. You're talking about Bermuda performances. Of course, he won at the Earth Course at the back end of last year on the European Tour in a decent field. You know, it wasn't dissimilar to this in terms of quality. It was the kind of the creme de la creme in terms of European Tour plus a few of the other. You know,
how long's the Earth Course?
7675, I think it is from memory. So, you know, that's longer than this.
He's won at Augusta. He's won the Dubai Desert Classic. There's a few tournaments that just constantly crop up here with the winners. Augusta's won, clearly. We've also got St Andrews. McIlroy, third. Leishman, second. Jason Day, fourth. Tiger Woods, two-time winner at St Andrews. Ernie Els, second and third at St Andrews. So St Andrews is all over it like a rash. And the Dubai Desert Classic is all over it like a rash. You know, you think Rory McIlroy. Well, he's run at the Emirates Golf Course twice, yeah?
Yeah.
Tiger Woods has won there twice. Henrik Stenson, who is an absolute Bay Hill phenomena, even though he's never won here, he's won at Emirates Golf Course. He's got a second and a third there. Justin Rose finished second there. Tyrrell Hatton, who I was on a few years ago here, who finished in the top five, he's finished third twice at the Emirates Golf Course. Mm. And, of course, he's a two-time Dunhill Links winner. So that link between St Andrews, Dubai and here, it's pretty strong. And you just run it, you run through with Danny Willett. He's clearly won a green jacket. He's won the Dubai Desert Classic in 2015. And in that St Andrews Open Championship that Zach Johnson won, and I know you're looking at Zach Johnson, that playoff was made up of Louis Oosthuizen and Mark Leishman. Just out of that was Jordan Spieth and Jason Day by a shot, and just behind them was one Danny Willett. And he's also finished second and fifth at the Dunhill Links Championship.
Yeah.
So you throw all that in the mix. He was second for greens in regulation in Mexico, and he was also fourth for par five scoring at Riviera. Only Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau in this field. Let me just look this up. I don't want to quote mistruths. Justin Thomas was 11 under in par 5 scoring at Riviera. Bryson DeChambeau was 10 under. Rory McIlroy was 8 under with Luke List, as was Danny Willett. So he was clearly absolutely breaking the backs of the par 5s at Riviera. He was 8 under across 12 looks at the par 5s there. Played okay in Mexico, and this is it. He's got that kind of indifferent form that's not bad and it's not brilliant.
It kind of fits with the progression.
I'm wishing I'd have taken the each way play. I'm wishing I've talked myself into the each way now. But yeah, 18-1, top 10. I just thought that was a cracking bet. Cracking bet. I think that Willett could go very well here. And I think if he's in, I can't understand why he wouldn't be. If he's serious about the PGA Tour, I think Copperhead in 2 weeks' time will be right up his alley. Because that's going to be pretty technical, as it always is.
Mm.
Do you see Willett more as a technical grinder, or do you see him as someone that actually scores freely when he's in great nick? Because actually, his wins tend to be more mid to almost resort-level scoring.
He's. I remember when him and Francesco Molinari were battling out the Italian Open a couple of years ago, and I think the pair of them were kind of 20-22 under. Yeah, clearly, yeah. he can clearly make a score, but I would still favour him on a kind of a 10-12 under type track. I think that'd be more where I'd expect him. You know, decent ball striking, you know, tenacity and ability to kind of ride out a tough week would be more where he's likely to win. And that's probably, you know, it kind of epitomises a major champion, doesn't it? And a player who can perform well in better fields.
But if this is like a 14-15 under, that's not too far away from a Danny Willett.
No, not with four par fives on the course, and when he's playing well on the fives, as you said there, you know, he could make 10 of those 16 under par. You know, that score by taking apart some of the par fives. So yeah, can see that. Yeah, I like Danny this week. I think whichever way you decide to play him, I think there's the scope for a run.
So if he's in the field in 2 weeks' time at Copperhead, just nudge me and say, "Don't forget Danny Willett." And I'll go, I'll never back Danny Willett ever again.
After he missed the cut of the Arnold Palmer.
yeah. Patrick Reed's my next tip. 1.5 points each way, 40-1. I've got 8 places each way. I fifth the odds with Paddy Power. I always think Reed is a bit of value. And you know why? It's because his stats are never great.
Mm.
And I don't care what anyone says. GIR, strokes gained approach, strokes gained tee to green. They're built into bookmakers' algorithms, I think. And Patrick struggles in a lot of the ball striking categories because he isn't really the greatest of ball strikers, is he?
No.
But actually, 14th in Mexico, 22nd at Pebble, 56th in Saudi, but he was out there for the dollars. 13th for Torrey, 13th at Wailea. He's playing all right, Patrick Reed. He's playing okay. And it was interesting. I hadn't really caught much wind of him until he shot that 68-64 in Mexico last time out.
Mm.
And he actually went out in the final round group with Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy, who were like five shots clear, whatever. That kind of freaked him out, I think, that he was playing with two gods in terms of ball striking. He did very little in the final round. But the fact of the matter is, he's sixth for strokes gained putting in the current PGA Tour skill statistics. Great. And I just love the way he plays on Tiff Eagle.
Yeah, play Bermuda.
Yeah, oh yeah. First at Doral 2014, seventh at PGA National 2016. Now, Honda Classic and Patrick Reed, I'd never associate the two because he isn't a good enough and ball striker. However, second, seventh and second at Copperhead, 2015, 16, 18. Third at Isleworth in the 2015 Hero Challenge, and he was seventh here 12 months ago. So that's he's also a two-time winner on Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass, Doral as mentioned, and also Kapalua, the Tournament of Champions in 2015. And, you know, we're talking about a strong tracks. Clearly he's won at Augusta, a second at Quail Hollow. Quail Hollow sits nicely with the likes of McIlroy, Jason Day, Tiger Woods. He's got a top 10 at Muirfield Village. He's got a fourth at Firestone South. You think McIlroy, Leishman and Day, they've all done very well. If not, McIlroy's a winner there. Leishman's finished third at Firestone. It's just there's a whole long list of very tough golf courses. And the other one, I should have mentioned closer to the top of the show, you think TPC Boston here. Both Arnold Palmer designs. Mm. McIlroy's won there twice. Mark Leishman was third there a couple of years ago, should have won. That was the year JT won, and Leishman kind of balked it when he was two or three shots clear. Jason Day's had a second and third at TPC Boston. Patrick Reed's finished fourth, fifth and sixth at TPC Boston in 15, 16 and 17. And if you're thinking European Tour, you're thinking Golf Swing, we talk about the Dubai Desert Classic. Well, I can't link Reed to that. He's never played it. But he's played the last few years at the DP World Tour Championship at the Earth Course, where, of course, Danny Willett won last year. Who was second? Patrick Reed. Who else has won around the Earth Course? Well, Rory McIlroy's won there twice, and Henrik Stenson,
yeah,
who's a Bay Hill expert, he's won there twice.
There's certainly good correlation.
Yeah. So, no, I don't think Patrick Reed will be popular this week. I don't think there's going to be a sea of blue on any kind of odds checker type of facility, but he's that kind of sneaky player like Mark Leishman a couple of years ago who you think, oh, he ain't been doing much recently. And then all of a sudden he just pops up. I hope. And then my shortest price this week of the, you know, the top six in the market, it was clearly the top seven, but Tiger's, he'll have some lady nursing him at home, no doubt, giving him some therapy on that neck of his. But McIlroy, Rose, Koepka, Fowler, Day and DeChambeau, I've gone for Bryson. He's just a winning machine, isn't he, DeChambeau?
It's been outstanding the last 12 months or so, hasn't he?
The other thing about Bryson is, there is something, when you look at this, that Rory McIlroy last year, on a par 72 format in Dubai, had absolutely annihilated the par fives when he just lost out to Hao Tong Li.
Yeah.
The year that Jason Day won it, he'd shot 9-under around the par fives at the AT&T Pebble. And if I'm looking at recent tournaments and I'm looking at par five scoring, going back to the Genesis Open, as I said, Bryson DeChambeau was 10-under for the par fives and he came 15th.
Mm.
And when he won the Dubai Desert Classic on Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens in January, Hao Tong Li was 12-under, Ernie Els was 13-under for the par fives. Number one for the week, Bryson DeChambeau, 14-under for the 16 looks at the par fives that week.
Yes, big number. A couple of eagles in there, wasn't there?
Do you fancy Hao Tong Li this week? Because wherever I look this season, and I'm looking at, you know, Dubai, I'm looking even at Mexico 2 weeks ago, He and Aaron Wise, who I think might go well this week, they were 9 under for the par fives in Mexico.
Yeah.
Wherever I look, Lee, there's a good look, there's a good angle on Hao Tong Lee.
Yeah, he's certainly been playing well, hasn't he?
Well, he's putting well as well, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, even going back to the back end of last year, and you talk about the Dunhill Links, and he finished 5th there.
Yeah.
Second in Turkey, that was a decent result in a decent field. 5th in fifth at the Ned Bank at Sun City as well. Again, these are all strong efforts, aren't they? Even 12th this year, Dubai, the Desert Classic again. He's clearly a winner at the Emirates, but he didn't throw in a bad performance. Second in Saudi as well. You know, clearly that's a strong effort against the likes of Dustin Johnson, who won that at the end. Yeah, if someone wanted to back Hao Tong Lee this week at 66, a little bit 80s out there, I wouldn't put them off whatsoever.
Mm. 80s would be the better price, clearly. Yeah. He's 66s now. Was there a snitch of 80s about there yesterday that I missed? No, it's all 66s. I'm not seeing any. But yeah, I think he's an interesting player this week, Hao Tong Lee.
Mm.
And Aaron Wise, if this turns into a birdie fest, don't forget he finished 2nd at Quail Hollow last year. He's also in the top 10 at Ridgewood. He has got a triple bogey in him.
Yeah.
But Aaron Wise played quite well in Mexico. I could see him sneaking up. And at his price, I thought, was quite large for a player of his young talent on a very wide open golf course off the tee. I'm sorry, Paul. I'm looking at the first round leader market. That's why I can't find 80-1.
Oh, on Hao Tong. When I looked earlier, there was a little bit on on Unibet. I think it was he'd taken a view on him.
I'm seeing Hao Tong Lee right now. Yeah, 80-1 with Unibet. See, exactly, outstanding price. And I'm seeing if you were interested in Aaron Wise, I was surprised. He's 150-1 with Coral right now.
Mm.
He's as short as 100-1 elsewhere. I could see Wise popping up. But yeah, those are my four. So let's hope that we can get some boys in the mix this week.
Yeah, no, I like those. I think I think you've got some scope for a result there. You touched on Zach Johnson. He's the other one that I've backed. He's not been quite right, has he, Zach, for a while?
No.
But you know, we know he's split from his caddy, Damon Green, back end of last year. He's got Brett Waldman on the bag now. He's an experienced caddy. He's been around with the likes of Ryan Moore and JB Holmes, Camilo Fajegas, Charlie Hoffman, he had a stint with as well. You talked about the St Andrews form, clearly. You touched on that a second ago, having won the Open Championship.
Rock solid.
I mean, I thought 90-1, 7 places, I'd take a chance on him. I mean, he's flashed a little bit of form. 66 in round one last week, and he was 2nd after the first 18 holes. He's sort of 64 in the third round of the Desert Classic. The actual results on the face of it don't look great, but there's certainly some little snippets of form there. And back on Bermuda, he's won 4 times on Bermuda over the course of his career. I think he'll feel very comfortable. 5 top 10s here at Bay Hill over the years. And if you look, 15 attempts, he's only missed a cut once. So,
He's done well here.
7,700 on DK, DraftKings for this week. For a player who's only missed 1 out of 15 cuts, feels like a nice little player to include in some of the teams as well.
Who's he going to be priced up with in that kind of bracket?
In fact, Siwoo was a similar kind of price as well.
But Siwoo is likely to miss the cut and will miss the cut because I've tipped him up where Zach won't. So this is it. I mean, there must be some players there you think, well, Zach, you know, at that kind of price point, you just want someone that's playing 4 solid rounds and making some birdies, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, 7-7, you're looking at the likes of Michael Thompson, Cameron Champ, who you're not guaranteed to get 4 days out of Champ by any stretch. Benny Ann, Keith Mitchell, 7-5. Is Keith going to, you know, bounce straight back from last week's win? And
surely he's on his 38th bottle of Bud Light, isn't he, by now, Keith Mitchell?
it, it'll go one or two ways with Keith, won't it? He'll either absolutely bomb, or he'll be one of these players that can keep he can keep his form going. We shall see. Hao Tong Lee is 7-4. I mean, that's, you know, if you fancy a bit of Lee, again, given the form he's in, he didn't miss the cut last year, 54th on debut. So yeah, there's, I think with Woods coming out of the market with DraftKings, it's going to open up to a lot of different ways that you can play the you can play your team this week. A lot of different ways. So yeah, I'm gonna go quite heavy in DraftKings this week with the big $100,000 competition that's out there. But yeah, in terms of outright, I've gone with Zach. And I think there's enough there to grab onto. And his driving accuracy at the Honda was great. He was second or third, just over 80%. And when he's driving well, you know, that's the kind of the backbone of his game, isn't it? We know he can putt and chip. He talked about the short game being important, and on his favoured Bermuda greens, I think he'll go well. But we shall see. We shall see.
I always put Zach and Kevin Kisner in the same kind of bracket. Very similar players. Mm. And don't forget, Kevin Kisner 2 years ago was in. He was in a kind of. It was him, Charlie Hoffman, and Mark Leishman fighting over the win.
Yeah.
So, you know, it isn't necessarily the fact that you've got to be a huge bomber to be competitive around here.
No.
If you've got a game that's, you're hitting some greens and you're scrambling and putting beautifully, which clearly is Zach Johnson's game, you can be very competitive around here.
I think, yeah, his greens and regulation hasn't been the best part of his game over the last few weeks and months, and I think that's the key. If he does find, you know, some form with his irons, then he could go very close here. If he's finding 60% of greens and regulation, he won't. He'll finish, you know, down the field. He'll probably make the cut, and he'll probably, you know, be a positive DraftKings player in that respect. But he needs to hit a number of greens to really stand a chance of that outright. But I think, yeah, 90-1. I thought it worth a stab, I think.
Right then, Qatar Masters, the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters. Always used to be a very well-respected tournament on the European Tour, didn't it? Mm. Always used to. It was never the quality of field of an Abu Dhabi or a Dubai, but because they used to play this in between the two, you used to get some very high-class performers here.
Yeah, you did, yeah. It's because the scheduling's changed, and we've gone from Oman now to Qatar after a little break in the Middle East. It's
suffered a wee bit, hasn't it, from the glory years, if you like.
Yeah, it has.
It's still a good, decent, strong European Tour event.
It's decent enough. I mean, I'd like it as a test, because I think I like it as a betting heat, because there's a few things that you can grab onto in terms of the way the course sets up, which we'll go into in a second. But yeah, it has suffered from its scheduling, it has to be said. And an early attendee list that also included the likes of Joost Lauwersen, Alex Levy, Paul Dunn, all three of those withdrew. Callum Shinquin withdrew as well. There's a few that would have been, you know, towards the top or mid of the market have dropped away, which has made it a little bit more of a, you know, a weaker looking market, particularly at the top. So some of the prices that you're getting on players really aren't quite as strong as you would hope. But, you know, you can only play with and bet with what you've got presented in front of you. And I still think there's scope to make some money out of this week. Going back to the market then, Thomas Peters heads it 11-1 generally. Jordan Smith, who showed a little bit of form at the back end of last week, is second favourite, 20-1. Tom Lewis has been backed heavily into 22s from an opening show, 28-1. Alexander Bjork, 28s. And then you've got the likes of Fabrizio Zanotti, who played really well last week, right up until the death, 33s. Ross Fisher, if he could find the putter, he could be very, very dangerous, 33s. And the enigma that is Victor Dubuisson, 33-1 as well in play.
Last seen heading for Nice Airport. He might not even turn up, De Brisson. you never can tell, can you?
No, you can't. But he's showing some form, and you know, he's a difficult one to call, isn't he? Because at his very best, he could win this by distance.
He might be having a perno in Antibes Harbour for all we know at the moment. You just don't know where the bloke is.
No, he does seem a little bit more focused on his game, which is positive for him. And you know, it takes a leap of faith.
He's a good player,
yeah,
clearly.
It takes a leap of faith to back him because, you know, he can throw his toys out of the pram very quickly and very early in a tournament if his things aren't going his way. And, you know, an early withdrawal is always on the cards. You know, again, I'm not sure I'd be want to, you know, building a DraftKings team around him because if he pulls out, he's torpedoed everything you've got. But equally, he could win the golf tournament. 33-1 if you fancy taking a chance on Victor. At the same price point, you've got Mike Lorenzo Vera, Jorge Campillo, 33-1. There's, you know, there's a few in that kind of bracket before you get into the 40s and 50s. But I guess that some of those players would have been, you know, quite a bit longer had the likes of Loughton and Alex Levy been here, but sadly not. So, we, you know, again, we deal with what we've got available to us. Qatar is played at Doha Golf Club. It's a Haradine design. 7,400-yard par 72. In the desert, Bermuda, Poa, greens. And historically, when it's been tranquil here, it's kind of lended itself more to the longer hitters. The rough isn't particularly thick. You can escape from off the fairway and you can attack the course. And, you know, when it's calm, 20 under or lower is quite feasible. When it's windy, which it often is, it often lends itself to a windy tournament here, simply from the topography. When it's windy, it plays far more linksy and it plays far more challenging. And this is often a course, so this is often a result that you look at and you correlate when looking at players who will go well in future linksy-based events. You know, they're the ones of the likes of the Open de France, which is often classed as an inland links, clearly the Open Championship when we get later in the year, so the likes of the KLM Open and to the Alfred Dunhill links. This is often when you look back in, particularly if it's going to be a windy year. And, you know, that kind of bears itself out. If you look back at the winners list over the last few years, Robert Coulson, 2010, 66-1. Thomas Bjorn, 200-1 back in 2011. Bjorn had shown a little bit of form prior to that. He had a top 10 in one of his previous two or three starts. So there was something to grab onto there. So yeah. Coulson, Bjorn, Paul Laurie in 2012. You know, there's a links link coming through already. Chris Wood, Sergio Garcia in 14. Back-to-back wins from Brandon Grace in 15 and 16. Before you get to Young and Wang, who won in 17 on course debut. And then Eddie Pepperell, 70-1. Who clearly did so well at the Open Championship last year. So when there's a bit of wind around, then I think you really can correlate. Even if the forecast isn't particularly for strong winds, if it's, you know, 10, 15 miles an hour, it can still play havoc with this event and really make an impact. And this year, actually, is going to be one of the stronger windy years. 20 to 25 miles an hour on Thursday, dips a bit on Friday, and then pretty solid 20 mile an hour on Saturday and Sunday. So it's going to be quite a challenge for the players, I think. And even so, you still need to be hitting 75 to 80% of greens in regulation. You need to scramble well, you need to minimise bogeys. And you need to do that by getting the ball up and down and putting well when you're on the green, either for birdie or for holding par. And going back to Pepperell, he made 4 bogeys in a week. Wang made 5. Grace made 4 and a double the year before. So you don't need a scorecard that's littered with bogeys and birdies. It needs to be more of a measured approach than that. The par 3 is the toughest part of the course, in my view. And if you look back at some of the form of the players who've done well here, going back to the last, all the way back to 2010, every player who'd finished, or every winner here had finished inside the top 10 in one of their previous 7 starts. So all of them had a little bit of current form to grab onto. And only Wang, actually, out of those same players, didn't have a top 20 already here at Doha before coming and winning. Clearly, that was on debut, but everyone else had some course form or some description to give you a little bit of hope that they could perform around these parts. So I think there's some good elements to grab onto with this. The wind element, the desert element, clearly, the Bermuda greens, they are mixed with Poa Trivialis here, but they're still Bermuda-based in principle. You know, clearly the linksy angle as well, given the winners that we've achieved here. So there's a few different angles to peruse. The way I've gone, and these my preview, as yours did, came out back end of last evening. So yeah. Some of these prices have changed slightly. I've backed Tom Lewis as my headline tip this week. And if you look back at Lewis's amateur career, he won the Boys Amateur at Royal St George's. He won the Lynx Trophy at St Andrews. He led the Open Championship as an amateur in 2011. To really kind of give us an indication that Lynx golf is his forte. He turned pro just after that Open Championship effort, won the Portugal Masters on his third start. And I think at the time then, we all thought that we'd got something, you know, really special, you know, to look forward to in Tom Lewis. And then he went right off the radar, lost his confidence, lost his game. Mm. Nothing happened. All the way up until the back end of last year. And then we started to see a little bit of form. Sixth at the Czech Masters. He won the Bridgestone Challenge a couple of starts later on the Challenge Tour. And then pitched up at Portugal, where clearly he had the positive memories from his win before. And he won his second European Tour event. And he's just gone from strength to strength since. I mean, he hasn't won since, but I've watched him a lot. He's put some cracking low rounds in. He's played some really good golf. And since then, he finished fifth at the British Masters behind Eddie Pepperell, who clearly won here last year. Seventh at the DP World Tour Championship at the Earth Course on Bermuda Greens. Ninth in Abu Dhabi, third at the Saudi International. So some good, strong fields and some good, strong results from those. And that was
by the water, wasn't it? Saudi.
Yeah, exactly. And again, you know, you're looking at the Earth Course, Abu Dhabi on Bermuda Greens. You know, all of these efforts have put him from obscurity to the brink of the top 50 OWGR.
He was fifth at Walton Heath, which clearly was won by Eddie Pepperell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The British Masters. Yeah. So it's, you know, there's good correlation there with Eddie Pep, and you know, as I say, he's on the brink of a top 50 now. He gets another result or two, he's going to be into the Masters. He got a late call up to go to Mexico, and it was very late, so didn't really expect him to do a great deal there, and he didn't, but. I think the bookies, I mean, for me, he's the second favourite in this field. Thomas Peters and Tom Lewis is the way I'd have priced this up. And he wasn't to start with. He was third or fourth, maybe fifth in the field. I think that he's hitting greens, he's scoring well, he's got this Lynx pedigree. He hasn't got particular form here, if you look at the track. But then if you go back to the years that he's played this was in this kind of fallow period for him when he just wasn't playing good golf. And even so, back in 2014, he opened with 68, 67. He sat sixth here at halfway when he was playing
that's
some...
That's enough, isn't it? That shows you.
I think so, yeah. I think there's enough there to suggest that he's gets on with the course well enough. And you combine that with the fact that he's playing far, far, far better golf nowadays than he was back then. That's enough for me. I think he's well worth a punt. He's now, as I say, he's been backed in backed into 22-1. I know I put him up. I know Ben Coley put him up as well. And I think the RFO have put him up this morning. Chapman's put him up in the paper as well. So he's been backed in heavily. So if you do fancy a bit of Lewis, I'd probably jump on him sooner rather than later, because he's likely to just turn into a sea of blue, particularly if Mr. Palmer fancies a bit of Lewis as well later this evening. Second tip this week is Jorge Campillo, who played really well last week. Again, you know, he put himself in a position not dissimilar to Ryan Palmer, actually, where he posted a nice early score. And
he finished like a train, didn't he, Jorge?
Yeah, he's sitting in the clubhouse and just waiting for everything to unfold. And Kirk Kijama, he picked him by one in the end. But even so, that was the fifth time that Jorge's finished runner-up on the European Tour. But I don't think he's not one of these kind of players who's incapable of winning and is always going to be the kind of the perennial bridesmaid. I think he's got more than enough game to actually go over the line. And if you look at the likes of he was third in the Irish Open last year behind Russell Knox. You know, that's another good indicator and a good decent event that he can play. You know, can play golf at a decent level. I mean, John Rahm is behind him that week, so there's, you know, some good players there. Striking the ball well, he was second for greens regulation last week, just under 80%, which in a week where it was particularly tough in terms of the wind, that's pretty good going. Third for scrambling, second for putting last week. Metrics were great. And the reason he didn't win was that he had an absolute nightmare on the fifth hole in the second round. If you remember the second round, it was absolutely howling. It was, you know, they had to stop during the day for the sandstorm that came.
Was he out? He was on the course when it got to its worst. People were saying that it went on for 45 minutes, an hour too long.
It was.
Was he out in that? Yeah.
He was playing in some of the toughest conditions, and even so, I mean, even when they came back out the following day, it was no picnic. You know, he was playing in some tough conditions, and he made a 9 at the par 5 fifth. You know, that's 6 over par for one hole. He missed the playoff by one shot. He would have, you know, everything else being equal, he could have won the tournament by 5 clear shots. You know, it doesn't work like that. I know, you know, you get to Sunday and, you know, the pressures of Sunday are all different if you're in position to win. But even so, you know, it's the rest of his game, the rest of his week was really good. 66-69 over the weekend was 2 shots better than anyone else. And if you go back to last year, this is really when he took his game came to life. He had 5 top 5 finishes in the space of 7 starts between February and May last year. And so he clearly likes this, you know, in terms of biorhythms, in terms of his game. It seems to be his time of year. He's played it 6 times in the past. Last time he teed it up, which was 2017, he finished 13th. 3rd for putting, 2nd for putts per round. So clearly got a measure of the putting surfaces here. And again, it was only that odd round. He shot 69, 67, 75 on the Saturday, then 66. And again, he shoots anything in the 60s on that Saturday, he wins the golf tournament. It's I think he's very, very close, Campbell. Very close indeed.
I'll say that.
Final couple of tips, players that I've backed. Andrew Pavan, again, is another player who impressed in the tough conditions last week. 8th for driving accuracy, 4th greens regulation on the week. And he's won 4 times on the Challenge Tour, but he finally broke through last year in the Czech Republic. If you remember, he's held off Patrick Harrington down the stretch, which was particularly impressive for a player trying to win his first European Tour event. When you've got a player like Harrington who's, you know, back 9, when he gets a sniff of a win, historically he's been a very strong player to try and beat. Great in the wind. Started the season pretty slowly, missed cutting Abu Dhabi, missed cutting Dubai. 34th in Saudi, 31st in Oman. So nothing really outstanding, but again he shot 69 on Sunday, or the final round in Oman, which was the joint best of the week. Lots to like, I think. 5th at Dunhill Links, we led after 36 holes, and 13th last year, was 4th going into Sunday. And, you know, he's got that win in the meantime. I think he's a better player now. I think he's a player that can move on. And finally, I've gone for a bit of experience to finish my team with a Tongchai Jaidee at 150-1. Now, he was 150-1 last week and finished inside the top 20, which is a pretty strong performance, I guess, for the guy. And his price hasn't shifted. It's stayed absolutely rock solid. And I thought that was well worth taking on, particularly with a tough, windy forecast. I think that plays right into the hands of more experienced players. I think it plays into the hands of a player like Jaidee, who has a history. If you look at some of the wins that he's had, Indonesian Open at 12-under, Ballantyne's Championship 4-under, Wales Open 6-under, he won at Le Golf National at 11-under. That was his last win on the European Tour. So, you know, these aren't 25-under wins. Yeah. They're
he's a grinder.
When the conditions are tricky and challenging, he can put a score together. And I think that comes with experience. I mean, the guy's 49 now. And he hasn't won since that win at the Open de France in 2016. But, you know, I think that bit of experience that he's got here is going to help. We talked about some of the winners here, the likes of Robert Carlsen, Thomas Bjorn, Paul Laurie. You know, they've all won that with a lot of experience under their belt, shall we say. 16 times he's played here since 2002. A couple of top 10, 7 top 25. So again, we're talking about a DraftKings player potentially. That's another one you could potentially put into your team this week. But I fancy he'll go a little bit better than that. 150s. I went that with Ball Sports, who are paying 8 places, a fifth of the odds this week. And that was a standout price for them yesterday evening as well. So that was well worth a look. Again, he has been backed in a little since then, so do check before you place your bet if you fancy a bit of that. But yeah, there's lots to like. 18th last week, as I said, top 16 for greens and regulation and putting, fourth for putting in Dubai on the Bermuda greens there. And again, he was one of these players who finished with 69 last week, which was joint best of the week. So a bit of momentum coming into this week. And I think there are far worse bets at that kind of price point, given the relative weakness at the field now at the top end of the market. So yeah, that's my four against the field in Qatar. Anything caught
you? You always like a bit of Raphael Jacquelin when it's like World War One, don't you?
I like Jacqueline.
Yeah, I know he's playing abysmally at the moment, but he's had a third and eighth round here.
Yeah,
in 17 appearances.
Yeah. You say he's playing abysmally. Yeah, he has actually shown up on a leaderboard or two in recent weeks and then kind of dropped away. I do prefer him when it's not a desert course. I do prefer him when it's a proper coastal course. But yes, when it's tougher and it's windy, then Jacqueline is one to always keep an eye on. When he produces that top 20, you know, if he comes around there and shoots a top 20 and puts in a decent putting performance, then he goes bang in the notebook for a suitable course a little bit further down the line.
Any love for Alvaro?
He has won here in the past, doesn't he?
Well, I remember that Sicilian win. You know, they played it on that coastal course in Sicily, and he came in off like 38 missed cuts on the trot. And he beat Hao Tong Lee and one of the talented South Africans, didn't he? And that was blowing an absolute hoolie that week.
Yeah, he's
down in Sicily.
He's a difficult one to call, isn't he?
Oh, he is. I'm sure I've seen him on a couple of leaderboards recently.
Oh, he finished third at the Emirates at the Dubai Desert Classic. He's missed a cut every time since. But
yeah, of course.
But that's the way he rocks, isn't it? You know, if you want to back Alvaro Quiroz blindly for the entire season, these 150 price points or 200, or you know, some of the events which are stronger, is even longer price than that. I think you'll get a return for your money over the course of the season.
Well, yeah, 2017, he won that Rocco Forte Open in May. That was his only top 10 finish of the year.
Yeah,
last year. Showed very little. I suppose he finished 19th here last year, missed the cut at the Open d'Espagne when I think everyone backed him. He then finished second at the Trophy Hassan Dur, and then late on, that was his only top 10 last year, and then this year he starts off 65th in Abu Dhabi, and then he finishes third in Dubai Desert Classic.
Yeah.
And now missed cut. So actually, based on the fact he's finished in the top 10 once for every year for the last 3 years, that would suggest he's already had his top 10. But yeah, I mean, he just jumped off at me, 125-1.
Yeah. I mean, you look through his top three wins for his career: Dubai World Championship 2011, Qatar Masters 2009, Dubai Desert Classic 2011.
The
guy can play desert golf. There's no question of that whatsoever. He's finished second here twice, 2010, 2011. You know, he can play the course. But you back him, he could miss a cut. He could quite easily finish virtually last. Yeah. Or, he puts it all together for a week and he rewards you.
A big price.
It's the risk you take in this game, isn't it?
Right, Paul, thank you for your time this morning.
Yeah, pleasure as always.
Rate and review us if you can on iTunes. That'd be much appreciated. The Golf Betting Show's one's already out there for the Arnold Palmer. I'm about to just record the latest one for this Qatar Masters. Right then, we'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening. See you again soon. Goodbye.